I will call the meeting of the Development Review Board to order. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Ms. Davis?
Here.
Chairman?
Here. We have a quorum. First matter on the agenda this evening is we have several sets of minutes we need to approve. They're all very short. Minutes of August 5th, has everybody looked at them?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a motion to approve them? You want to call the roll, please?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. And then we have the minutes of September 2nd. Again, if somebody would make a motion to approve them, please. Please. Finally, we have the minutes from September 16th. Again, they're very, very brief. If somebody would make a motion to approve them. Call the roll. We have two applications before us this evening for hearing. I'd like to begin by asking anyone who's going to address the board tonight to please stand so you can get sworn in.
Those who will testify at the public hearing, you are reminded that the River Forest Village Code makes it unlawful for any person to make a false statement of material fact to the village. Affidavit, oath, certification. Violations are punishable as a petty offense with a fine. Solemnly swear or affirm that you will give true testimony relative to the matters before this Development Review Board.
So the first application we're going to deal with tonight, that was filed on behalf of the library, application 22-008. And what we will do is ask someone on behalf of the applicant to make the presentation. Then we will listen to the comments from the village staff or consultants. We'll ask for audience participation, and then we'll give you an opportunity to respond. Would please go to the podium and identify yourself. And
hello. My name is Emily Compton. I am the director of the River Forest Public Library. So what I was going to do is just walk through the who, what, where, why, and when. So what we want to do and where, I'm here to request approval to install an 8x13-foot air handler unit on a poured concrete pad in space exterior to the north side of the library building. Place a 16x25-foot, 9-foot-tall masonry enclosure around it on a 1-foot-wide, 42-inch-deep concrete footer. So why do we want to do this? The library's air handler is currently housed in an interior mechanical room. Our ultimate goal is to reclaim the 396 square feet of space where the air handler equipment is now to remodel into a multi-purpose room we can use for programs, community meetings, and gathering space. The library currently has one meeting room, which is utilized for library programs and staff meetings and staff training, as well as community events and meetings. Having just one meeting room limits the library's ability to offer multiple programs at one time, so we can't have one for children and one for seniors. We also routinely deny reservation requests from the community because the room is in use. Section 6 of our plan development application, there is a statement indicating our application's compliance with the Village of River Forest Comprehensive Plan. Comprehensive Plan specifically notes the need for the library to better serve the community by working to meet the growing demand for meeting and activity space. And Houseel Levine Associates, am I pronouncing the name correctly? A review of our application, they note in Section 2, both that the plan recognizes the value and importance and overall contributions of the public library to the quality of life for River Forest community, and the comprehensive plan statement that the village should work cooperatively with the library to find solutions to its space problems. I believe our plan represents a rare opportunity to create more space to be used and enjoyed by the River Forest community at the public library. Section 13 of our plan development application, the interior room build out, which is on the screen, shows a drawing of what we would like to do if we are allowed to move the air handler outside. Phase one of the project involves replacing the air handler and enclosing it with the masonry wall and prepping the interior space by raising the floor because it is sunken right now, adding a ceiling and drywall, and adding plumbing to the floor. Phase two of the project would complete the room remodel and install an accessible family restroom, which would be an impactful improvement to the building as well. While we know the conversion of the interior space to public use triggers the requirement for an additional two on-site parking spaces, the complexity of the parking situation in the area, which is shared with both Roosevelt Middle School and the public parks, make providing additional parking particularly challenging for the library. While we agree with Hausiel Levine's parking analysis, which suggests consideration be given to not requiring additional parking. On to the who, which is the kind of the land occupied by the library building is leased from the River Forest Park District. The library has had several meetings with the Park District Board of Commissioners, which are listed in Section 3 of our application. And the library and Park District have come to an agreement through a Memorandum of Understanding, included in Section 4 of our application, about the following. Park District has agreed to allow the library to act as the interested agent throughout the plan development process and the project itself, allowing us to submit this application, attend meetings, manage construction, et cetera, and then ultimately to maintain the space. Park District has agreed to renew the library's lease, regardless of whether our plan development is approved, for a term of 50 years. Current lease would expire in July of 2022. Plan development is approved. The lease will account for the additional 260 square feet of space needed for the project. You will see in the Memorandum of Understanding that the additional space is listed as 275 square feet, but upon having the area surveyed by Prairie Land Survey Company, we found the area is actually 260, and it is listed correctly in the lease. If our application is not approved, the lease will still renew, but will not include that additional space. There was a statement in Section 5 of our application acknowledging that we must have the lease in place in order to construct, maintain, and operate the proposed development. At this point, the lease has been voted on and approved by the Library's Board of Trustees and is on the agenda for the November 8th Park District Board of Commissioners meeting, where we anticipate it will be voted on favorably. And then the start date of the new lease would be December. Continuing through the MOU, there are a couple more points there. The library has agreed to build a masonry enclosure around the air handler that will match the library's facade. And the Park District has agreed to allow the library to replace one locust tree if it is damaged. This tree is within the area of excavation for the masonry enclosure. The village arborist has evaluated the tree. His evaluation was at the end of Section 1, the introduction to our application. The locust tree's caliper is 22 inches. Shared that evaluation with the executive director of the Park District this past year. Mr. Sletton explained that the Park District planted two trees that are 2.5 to 3 inches in diameter and agreed to plant 7 to 8 trees throughout the park system on demolition of the tree. And then the library will pay for those. That was a long who. So now I'll go to how. Starting with Section 8 of our application and was it this? Yeah, there we go. So this is site plan AS 1.0 in your application. There is a dotted outline box. That's the area that we're discussing outside of the library. The air handler unit, which is marked new AHU, would be installed on a poured concrete pad right of the building. The ductwork would run from inside the library out of two existing windows. So we already have the windows there, the air handler, and then the enclosure be around it. AS 1.0, this sheet also shows the location and size of existing trees in the area and indicates the locust tree that would need to be right there. But it also depicts the topography line, which shows the direction of drainage flow from the enclosure. An arrow depicts the slope of the concrete pad, and the masonry walls will have scuppers along the base for drainage as well. Moving on to the masonry enclosure itself, safety questions and aesthetics. Brick on the enclosure will be mixed from the sample board provided on the table to match the library's facade. It will have a limestone cap, which is that grayish piece on there, which will match the existing limestone details on the library. This is site plan AS 2.0, if you're looking in your packet. And it's all about the wall. Up left notes that the top of the enclosure will line up with the top of the existing windows. We believe this will create an aesthetically pleasing look. Move to the bottom left, it notes the height of the enclosure is 9 feet. This provides a safe height that doesn't invite climbing. The height also minimizes the risk of foreign objects like soccer balls entering the area. The wall cannot have a cover because the air handler needs free airflow, but the air handler itself will be inside a metal casing that can withstand hits from baseballs and the like without damage. Bottom right notes the placement of a metal gate on the west side of the enclosure for access to the air handler for maintenance or to repair. We were asked by the technical review committee to find a latch for the inside of the gate in the unlikely event that somebody would end up inside and need to get out, and our architect was able to add that to our plan. Regarding noise, we provided a sound summary chart in our application from the library's HVAC vendor, Oak Brook Mechanical Services. It puts the decibel level of the unit in the 50s range, and by our architects, engineers, as well as Johnson Controls, the company that makes the air handler. Holes in the 50s are equivalent to a household refrigerator, and 60 is equivalent to normal conversation. We do not believe the decibel level of the unit will adversely affect either the users of the library or the adjacent field. I do have an update to the schedule that we included in our application in section 14, where we had hoped to begin construction this January and complete the project in the spring. Architects bid a similarly sized project for the Forest Park Public Library this fall with very disappointing results. We received only 2 bids at very high prices. I believe this is because of supply chain issues that we're all hearing about in the U.S., coupled with how close it is to the end of the calendar right now. So our architect suggested bidding in January for construction in either the spring or fall 2020. I did consult with our HVAC company, and they are confident they can keep the air handler working until that time. Interior construction would take an estimated 10 weeks, starting with the excavation of the site and the pouring of the concrete pad. After the pours, which takes a month, the air handler would be installed, the masonry wall built, and then the exterior site would be cleared before interior work begins. The preliminary construction plan, in your packet, it's marked AS 1.2. There are 2 options in terms of the path the contractors would take to get to the site, one from Lathrop Avenue and one from Jackson. At this point, we believe the path from Jackson would be less disruptive as it goes alongside rather than through Centennial Park. So we would discuss these options with the Park District and Roosevelt School. That was my presentation. Questions?
All right, anybody have any questions of this applicant? Have anyone else who's going to make a presentation on behalf of the applicant? We will ask you to take a seat for a minute, and we will ask whether any of the village departments have comments on this.
We have the village's planning consultant here tonight. Read his report momentarily. Quickly, in the DRB's packet, there is a summary of the comments received from the administration and finance department. Just to recap those comments briefly, the proposed project will not implicate the tax status of the property. Nothing changes there. The Public Works and Development Services Department noted that the application doesn't specifically verify that the number or caliber of tree replacements will be equal to or greater than the 22 inches to be removed. They would just ask, perhaps during the construction permitting phase, that a specific number and caliber inch of trees provided for. There was some attention paid during the technical review process to construction logistics due to some of the parking area, the parking congestion, and just pedestrian traffic in this area, as well as precautions needed for as well as the storage of construction area. So just asking that the library give some consideration to that, which they have to. The applicant also provided a summary of the noise-related information relative to the outdoor HVAC equipment. Ultimately, based on the specifications provided, this appears that it will comply with the village's noise restrictions. However, if over time the unit begins to make noise than what is typically permitted, the village has nuisance standards to ensure that this does not become. As the applicant noted, the public safety departments raised a question about what happens, although the wall is going to be very tall in the event that there is someone who determined to get over that wall, for whatever reason, perhaps even to retrieve a ball. There will be a mechanism for an individual to get out of that space without having any. There was also a review during technical review of whether or not, you know, this is by an athletic field. Is there any concern about balls flying into the area that could lodge themselves into one of the units and potentially cause and there was information provided to the village satisfactory to the public safety department that the units are designed to withstand that and not have it become a public. Ultimately, the project will not require that the village hire additional personnel, modify its utility systems, vehicles or equipment in order to development. We would recommend some very basic conditions of approval that would be typical of any plan development, including that the application built in substantial compliance with the approved plans.
Okay.
We have the village's planning consultant.
All right, John Houseel, village's planning consultant. So I will go through, it's a pretty straightforward application and the applicant has been very responsive in additional exhibits and narrative explaining some of the things we had talked about at the technical review committee. So real quickly, I'll go through my memorandum dated October 14th. It's a very straightforward application in terms of consistency with the comprehensive plan. It's 100% consistent with the comprehensive plan. The nature of the use, the intensity of the use, and the overall characterization of the use does not change with this application, that being the River Forest Public Library and all of the different services and amenities it provides. This site and this facility is essentially in the middle of what functions as a civic campus for the village of River Forest. At the north end, you have the park district. In the middle, you have the library. At the south end of this block, you have Roosevelt Middle School. And so collectively, these three governmental units function as a educational civic campus, if you will, for the village. So these are all very closely coordinated with one another. The surrounding uses of the property to the north of this property, but sort of part of the same subject property in terms of a zoning lot, is the Centennial Park. It's about a 3-acre park on the north. North of that is R2 on the north side of Chicago. To the east of this site, you have R2 on the other side of Jackson. To the west of this site, you have R2 single-family residential on the other side of Lathrop. To the south of this, you have PRI zone property, which is public recreation institution, which is the school district, the middle school. So all surrounding this is either other PRI zoned property, public property, public uses, or residential on the other sides of adjacent streets. It's consistent with the comprehensive plan on several fronts. First and foremost is the land use designation of the subject property as public slash semi-public, of which the library is. That does not change. Further, the comprehensive plan specifically states several things that support this application. There's a goal in the comprehensive plan which reads, maintain and enhance the high quality of River Forest public services, facilities, and infrastructure of which this is a part, and foster a collaborative environment that supports cooperation of local taxing bodies, regional partners, adjacent municipalities, and other organizations. So this directly is supported by this goal. Further, there are a couple of objectives that support this application in the comprehensive plan. The first objective is to provide for public, quasi-public uses to continue the high quality of facilities and services within the community. Of this, this application supports that by enhancing the public space and offerings within the structure itself. Another core objective is to regularly review village facilities, infrastructure, and services to identify potential issues and prepare for necessary renovations, replacements, and improvement projects. And this improvement project dovetails exactly with that recommendation. Finally, it states further in the comprehensive plan specifically for the library, it notes and articulates that the library is in a situation where it needs more space and that it, and parking is an issue. And it states in the comprehensive plan specifically for the library, the village should work cooperatively with the library to find solutions to its space and parking problems, likely requiring coordination and cooperation with the Park District and District 90. And this application is exactly a manifestation of that recommendation. So overall, it's 100% consistent with the comprehensive plan goals, land use designations, and core objectives. There are no zoning required site development allowances or deviations from underlying zoning standards with regard to bulk standards and setbacks. As measured to the adjacent residential properties on the other sides of Jackson, Chicago, and Lathrop, the nearest single-family homes are 250 to 350 feet away. So the homes are really significantly far away from this little bitty enclosure with the air handling unit. And if you measure the setback and take the park and the library, which is all park district property, as a zoning lot, it's more than 235 feet away from the northern edge along Chicago. And that's the only edge that's changing. The height is not changing. The setbacks to the east and the west are not changing. The only thing that is changing in terms of a zoning standard for bulk regulations or setbacks is the setback from the Chicago property, Chicago Avenue property line from the north. And it changes from 245 feet setback to 234 feet setback. So they can be as close as 50 feet. So they got about 195 feet to spare. So they're doing okay. There is a site development allowance required for parking. Parking for this campus is complicated. And I say campus because it's not tied directly to the library. The code requires a specific amount of parking for a library. In fact, it requires one parking space for every 250 public feet of floor area within the library. And library is specifically designated as a use requiring parking as a line item in the parking standards. Parking for the library is tied directly to parking for the school, tied directly to school parking for the park district. When Roosevelt came in a few years ago to redo their landscaping, hardscaping, parking, it was complicated. It was a long application. There was a lot of feedback. I think Terra Engineering did the programming for it. It went through several iterations. Parking for the library is integrally tied to parking for the Roosevelt campus. So I couldn't get in to say exactly how much parking the library has per se available to it, although there are some designated spaces. They're converting an internal air handling unit space by moving the unit outside and converting that internal air handling unit space to new public available space. space for programming. They're increasing about 400 square feet, give or take a little bit less, 398 square feet of public space. So at one parking space per 250, they're required to provide two parking spaces for this request. But it is not a big addition. They're literally activating a little bit of space inside by putting the air handling unit outside. So technically, they're required to get, as part of this approval, they would need a site development allowance for two parking spaces, because they're activating internal space that's about 400 square feet, which triggers a need for two. And so you have to take that into consideration. I don't think professionally that as complex as parking is for this campus, that a request or activated space that is this nominal would require digging into the school, the park district, and the whole block's parking situation. You know, parking for an area is bad when the comprehensive plan flags an area as being short on parking, and specifically identifying it's going to take the village, the library, the park district, and the school all working together to figure it out. That usually doesn't get flagged in the comprehensive plan, but it's of note. So I think the parking will be just fine. With regard to noise, appearance, and safety, the applicant has addressed some of the issues we raised at the technical advisory committee. Noise is nominal. They had their technical folks there who were installing the HVAC equipment. And based on the noise levels being, you know, refrigerator a little bit more versus, you know, normal conversation, it wouldn't affect negatively people who are inside the library, and it wouldn't affect nearest residential unit, which is 250 to 350 feet away. Over kids playing on the plate, you know, the park, and coaches and parents cheering, you'd never hear this thing in an adjacent piece of property. So that's fine. The appearance, it's attractive. High-quality material matching the fit and finish of the library. It'll be just fine. They are removing one tree to accommodate this. They will be, haven't agreed to replacing the trees that are required by village code. They've not specified exactly where those trees will be. That'll be done after the fact in cooperation with the park district. The new tree locations will be approved by the village upon installation. They're not required to identify locations now at the time of application. And then safety and of adjacent park activity. One of the things we raised is right next to this is programmable park space, and we didn't want this enclosure. It sticks out about 15 feet, 4 inches from the side of the building. You know, would that be in too close a proximity to kids running around playing? And the answer is no. It's actually south of the tree line separating the school from the build, from the soccer field. So the activity will not impact the library addition. The library addition will not impact use or enjoyment of the adjacent park. Safety issue with regard to the height will deter people from getting in, with the addition from the architect of making sure that if a kid did get inside, they'd be able to just push the door open and get out. So it would lock from the outside, but you get out from the inside. So they've met all the different standards of or additional materials that we've asked them to address. Again, the only relief they need technically as part of any approval is site development allowance for two parking spaces, which they are not proposing to add. But because of the activated space, they are required to provide.
Anyone in the audience who wishes to? We'd ask the applicant. Well, I had trouble understanding some of the things you said with these masks on.
Yeah.
Tell us again what your construction schedule is for this project.
Sure. So we were hoping to go out for bid in January, and we were going to do you want to explain this a little better? Because you were, this is Natalie, our architect. Is that okay if she explains the
sure.
schedule for bid?
Yes, it's Natalie Clemens. I work for Williams Architects. We are planning to go to bid in January, and we have two bid proposal dates we're going to put out to the contractors. Can you hear me? Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
All right. We have two bids we're putting out to. We're going to do an alternate bid of timing on the bid for this project, based on these needs of the park, the
the library and the material shortages that are and labor shortages that are happening right now that we discovered last week or a week and a half ago. One of the bids is a spring start date ending before school ends. The second bid is a fall start date starting right after school begins and going through the end of the year. So based on what is best for the material shortage and the labor shortage, the library will be able to pick at that time which schedule. However, we are planning to submit for permits in early November.
So, park is used all year long. How do you propose to protect the people who are playing in the park or the spectators in the park during construction? And I assume those two gray lines there are the suggested ways that you're going to transport materials into the park. How is all that going to be coordinated to protect the kids who are using the park?
So in negotiations with the park district, they have labeled dates of the seasons. Is that correct, Emily?
Yeah, I don't think there's really a great time to do it because, like you said, the fields are used pretty constantly. So we would have to coordinate the dates that we would need to have trucks coming through or have materials coming through with the park district and the schools. And I think the first thing we would have to discuss with them would be which route to take, because there are two different options. But did you want to know about like how fencing would be set up and how the construction site would be?
You know, there are gym classes in those parks all day long, soccer in the afternoon, there's baseball there. I would assume that the construction is going to going on at the same time that some of those activities are, particularly when school is in session. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you're going to move your materials there in such a way that it doesn't interfere with the park activities. Mm-hmm. Given any thought to that, what's your plan to keep the park available safely for all the kids who are using it?
The area that is kind of dashed where our tree is being demolished, that is our storage and staging area. That is the area the Masons believe they will need to store all the CMU and brick on site. That will be fenced in. So any access to materials is already going to be fenced in. We could add additional fencing, but it might interfere with bringing in the concrete truck for the pouring.
I'm not worried about additional fencing. I'm worried about bringing the concrete trucks. If you have a gym class out there at 10 o'clock in the morning and all of a sudden Ozinga or somebody comes in with a concrete truck, who's going to win?
Outside for gym of February. If they were looking at starting spring, people are inside. Well, when you're right, when you have kids running back to after school, but baseball.
Right.
I think no matter what we do, we would have to coordinate very closely with Roosevelt and with the park district so they know what days we're having construction done, what days it would be too disruptive, where they may not be able to use the field for a certain amount of time or part of the day.
Or there might be putting the burden on you. There might be times when the only time you can bring
right.
trucks in there is before 7:30 in the morning or
mm-hmm.
something like that.
Right.
So that you don't interfere. You know, I don't know when you're going to be construction. You're not going to be done by April, and that's when the kids start going outside. And if you wait and construct in the fall, the problem is even greater.
Sure. Yes. And we can write those stipulations into the contract. Another note to this is that when the library did address the Park District with this proposal, they did not contest any of the library's use of their property. They said they could manage around it. It's just a matter of scheduling the dates. And if Emily needs to give an affidavit for that, she.
Anybody else have any questions about this application? Anything else you want to tell us?
Have nothing else.
Okay, thank you for coming. And at this point, what we do is we close the public portion of the meeting, which means that there are questions that we need to ask you, we'll ask you, and then we'll discuss among ourselves how we want to proceed at this.
Requiring those two parking spaces, and I think that certainly reasonable not to require them.
I just had a question about the timing with the Park District. For getting.
I think that their in their application, they said they were willing to put a condition. Approval was conditioned on them entering into a formal agreement or signing a new lease going beyond the MOU that they have. Let's assume that somebody's going to make a board that we approve this application. I think that there are a number of conditions that I've been thinking about that we ought to put on here. Some of them already been discussed. I think that obviously it's got to be built according to the plans. I'd like them to agree to that the interior space is going to be used as it proposed for public space, office for library director, library board president. It's obviously got to be subject to the lease being finalized. You got to waive the parking, grant the site development allowance to waive the parking. That on their agreement to provide by our landscape ordinance include the tree, and we don't have to discuss the inches that all set out in the ordinance, so we can. I think that it ought to be conditioned upon some agreement with the school district to protect the use of the field and protect the kids who are using the field, so that here with the hours on, you know, you can't after 7:30 in the morning, let's say. Problems for your contractor, but you have to be concerned with the village and the kids.
Good. I know, like, when you have work done at the house, you can't have. There being an issue. Village has established work hours.
I'm sorry, let me pull them up rather than go. Through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., Saturday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. hours of work. For certain types of projects, special projects, we have made limited exceptions. Large piece of equipment, closures, we may make time in order to facilitate traffic flow, we'll drop off. So if it's on a limited basis, the conditions, but your space is specified to follow the landscape ordinance, give the parking requirement, and to work with the
moved and seconded that we recommend to the Board of Trustees approval of this plant application.
Sure. Davis?
Yes.
Or, Chairman Martin?
Yes. Recommendation of the Development Review Board. Next step is to our findings of fact that get submitted. You're encouraged to attend that meeting also. So. Evening. All right, so the next matter we're going to hear tonight is this application property at 400 Ashland. There's already a plan development in place on this property. Applicant is that there be an amendment to that plan development because of the scope of the work, or the scope of the amendment. We're required to file an application. Would any other application. They'd have to meet all the standards, apply all the information that's required unless we've and it appears that they are finally ready to proceed. So should that be fine.
Good evening. Try to speak through the mask. But if you need me to take it off, I can. My name is John Sheese. Really weird. My name is John Sheese. I'm an architect with a place of business at 905 Home in Oak. I am here representing 400 Ashland LLC. It's a corporation that owns the building at 400 Ashland. Manager for that corporation is here in case you have questions. But I
What I'd like to do is run through the PowerPoint presentation. I have a copy of our application, but because there was an ongoing thing, situation related to the parking, there are some things in the application that are new, and we have that presented there. We've also out a what to call that? That's a receipt for overnight parking that the property owner and manager of the LLC has done, and it'll become clear why that's in front of me. With that, we'll start the. Thank you. The development team is self representing JCSA and the client 400 Ashland Hill. As way of introduction, as the chair was pointing out, the plan development that originally was voted on, and there's a current ordinance, was approved on May 28th of 2013 when a previous owner moved through that process. It was not 400 Ashland LLC. There was an ownership change in the building sometime in 2018, and 400 Ashland and Victor took over the building. As far as the, so we're here asking for a major amendment with possible site development allowances, and the possible will become clear as we start talking about the parking. I did want to point out that the building is currently classified as a mixed-use building in terms of taxes. There is the tax bill in your packet that shows the classification as a 2-12. On 2-12, that's a residential use. So in terms of this approval will not have an impact on the tax classification. There is no density increase in the sense of we're not asking for any additional density. The building envelope remains the same, meaning the roof and all the exterior walls are not being moved. The building height is not increased. The parking requirements, we're here to propose a solution to that. We'll get to that in a bit. We are changing some windows in the space that we are modifying. That came as a result of a recommendation from this body, DRB, through the preliminary. You'll see we've adopted those recommendations. And the new unit, there's a document from 400 Ashland LLC committing that the new unit, which is a studio, will conform to the Village of River Forest affordability guidelines. This is the site plan that we submitted with the application, and you'll see the building is a one-story mixed-use concrete frame building. It has entrances both on the Ashland side and on the central side. Some of the individual units can be accessed through central, but there's a primary building entrance on Ashland Street side. There are four off-street, on-grade, uncovered parking space. Sorry if I said four, I meant five parking spaces. Those five spaces have been there since the original plan development. It was part of it. I think the building had four, and one space was added. I can say much more about this, but we can always come back to the slide. Here are some pictures of the building. The image on the left-hand side shows the entrance off of Ashland and the parking lot. You see the van there. And then on the right-hand side, you see the actual entrance and the windows that will be used by this this new proposed use. You also see a window air conditioner that's actually set into the wall. That is going to be removed and replaced with an awning window. The windows on the east face are more, they're 1920 single pane windows. Those will be replaced with windows that more like the window on the right, left-hand side. Those are new windows. They have operable windows. Those will, the new windows will look similar to those. This is the current floor plan of the building. The blue denotes all the commercial or business use. The yellow denotes the residential use. So you can see right now, the only residential use is on the west side. It has its primary entrance off of Central, the one bedroom plus unit, the office study is the plus. That was constructed as part of the 2018 PD ordinance. Right now there are four tenants and it's subdivided as you can see. Space that we're looking to deconstruct is the old Excel Oil space or tenant number two. This is the new configuration and you can see the change from blue to yellow. There is a minimum size for residential units, even though it's a studio. Village's code is 380 square feet. 327 square feet, and why the unit was configured like that to conform to that size requirement. Another thing of note that came through the technical review, the fire department right now, oops, oh, I don't think I can point to this because it won't show up. But there is a currently, there is a door from tenant number two to the common area corridor space, the white, if you can see that. The fire department thought it's important when it changes in use that that door be blocked off, and that's why you see that. So there will be no way to get from the residential, the new residential space, into the common corridor. This is a statement from the building code showing the minimum sizes for that. It also has some other requirements. And I believe that during technical review, this was looked at, and I also believe that the unit, that the spaces that we're proposing are compliant with that. And this is a little bit more in focus, and the the blue is the current configuration. This space does have its own toilet facility. That toilet facility would be changed into a bathroom with a shower, galley-type kitchen. You can see the closure of that door. So this would be a self-contained unit. Folks couldn't go into the common area. So the top view is the east elevation, and we're labeling that as existing. And you can see the window change that was recommended. We thought that that was a good recommendation. The bottom panes are frosted to just provide privacy, but also allow a lot of light in the future space. Entrance of the building and everything to the right on both images stays the same. The view of the south elevation, And you can see we're trying to be consistent with all the new window changes. You'll see that new awning window that I referenced. We're looking at the images. So we get to the heart of the matter. After working with village staff and the village's consultant, John Hausiel, it's of note, the plan development that was approved in 2013, I think in my earlier testimony, I might have called that 2018, but it's late 2013. The ownership change was in. The parking that was required by the development at that time was 7 spaces, 5 on-site spaces and 2 off-site spaces that were leased by what was then former community bank space. And when 400 Ashland took it over, that lease was no longer in effect for those 2 spaces. So when John Hausiel took a look at this, the new proposed plan, in conversation with him, and I believe that's his recommendation, that the new proposed plan will require 8 parking spaces. Since we have 5 parking spaces on site, we were tasked to go and find 3 off-site spaces. That's a hefty task, and I took that on myself. I talked to 4 folks in the area that had potentially available spaces. And by available spaces, it doesn't mean that, gee, I've got a space. These have to be above, spaces have to be above and beyond what the code requires for that particular use. I can tell you Byline Bank was the first and most obvious choice. They were not interested in leasing. After almost 2 months of speaking to them, their facilities manager thought it was not in their best interest. Fifth Third Bank, we are still talking to Fifth Third Bank. Branch manager is very amenable, but nothing formal has come forward. Their facilities manager was on vacation, so that led us to search for other options. We talked to Jack and Nancy Strand right here at Lincoln Park. I'm not sure what happened, but there was no callback on that. And we also looked at the property at 349 Ashland, just across the bridge. That turned out not to have spaces available. So we were left with looking at the village's lots. And in working with Lisa, staff identified some potential lots. My client went online and reserved 3 parking spaces. The documents in front of you show those leases. They're on a month-to-month basis. Those happen to be overnight spaces, not 24-hour. Ideally, we would have found 24-hour spaces. They tend to be at a premium, but our hope and our proposal here is that you will look at that and vote on this subject to either leases, you know, overnight leases, or there are 24-hour spaces available, but they just aren't available now. Maybe Lisa can fill in the blanks on that, because this was very new information for us. We thank Lisa for her help, but we just wanted to tell you where we are. I'm not sure that Fifth Third Bank spaces will actually come to a lease. I'll be frank with you on that, because I'm just not sure. The branch manager is supportive, but he's the branch manager. He's the facilities manager. So I'm not sure if this is a good time for a break, Mr. Chairman, to dialogue back and forth about this particular. I think we're there. We are. I'm available to move slides back and forth if you wish.
The same side.
That's correct.
Go through our village comments.
Sure. Village's technical review committee and staff reviewed this application. The Public Works and Development Services Department, Fire Department, and Public Safety Department recommend that this proposed plan development will not have an increased demand on. Meaning no additional staff would be hired in order to service the development, no additional equipment. Finance department examined this and determined that the addition of one residential unit not impact the tax. How residential properties are assessed at commercial properties are assessed at 25%. So adding one additional unit would not modify the amount of tax revenue. As this is already classified as a mixed proposed plan development, as Mr. Shees discussed, does have some parking challenges. I'll address that in just a minute. If the DRB wishes to make a recommendation to the Village Board of Trustees that this application be approved, I would note the following conditions and we can comment that this application be built and that the 24-hour parking must be maintained duty and the owner should have to provide some annual certification. They are proposing one additional affordable housing unit, which is a gain for the village and brings us closer into compliance with the state's requirement that if the village doesn't have 10% housing stock as affordable, designated as affordable by the state, we have to maintain an affordable housing. This would add one unit to the village. My recollection from the plan, 9 units short of meeting the state's, 39 units short of state's goal. We would just ask that the applicant provide some sort of certification basis to the village in a form of village indicating that the unit is rented in compliance with the Illinois Housing Development Authority standards for the Chicago area as updated from time to time. That is the standard that is utilized to determine whether or not a unit is affordable, and it sets monthly rental rates and sale prices for units. It's a zero-bedroom or one-bedroom unit in the Chicago metro area, according to the 2018 affordable rent limits, would be between $889 and $952 per month. These charts are updated approximately every 3 years. I don't know that they've published the 2021 data yet, and it may be slowed down due to that. But this would be updated approximately every 3 years. Need able to raise rent over time, but in compliance with those. With regard to parking, so what has happened today, and as the applicant outlined, is that they've made a number of identify 24-hour parking, number one, to bring the project back into compliance with the original plan development permit, and also to provide parking for the new residential unit. As Mr. Housiel will cover in a few minutes, we will consider this a one-bedroom unit, which would require two parking spaces. They are asking in their initial application for a site development allowance of those full two spaces. Mr. Housiel will talk to you about the fact that he recommends. The village does have certain public parking lots throughout the community.
where 24-hour parking is available. Staff identified two spots that are available for rent. It's $120 a month, and that rental can be set up on an ongoing and constantly auto-renewed basis so that those spots are secured. One space was located in the CVS lot that is located at the corner of Thatcher Avenue and North Avenue. The other spot was located at a village-owned parking lot right outside in the Village Hall here at Lake and Park. There currently are no parking spaces available in the Thatcher lot, which is the East and West Thatcher lot located at Keystone Park right by the depot. If we go online, we see that there is a wait list for that lot. The estimated waitlist position is 15. So there are 15 vehicles ahead of this applicant in order to fill spots. So what you have before you is a reservation and a waitlist. It is not an actual purchase of those spots because they're not. So as I mentioned before, the only spots that are currently available, or at least they were as of 5 p.m. tonight, was at CVS. And so that's a bit of a challenge. However, if the DRB considers this, I would note a couple things. We always note that previous plan developments are not precedent setting. However, when the village approved the McDonald's plan development more than 8 years ago, I don't remember the exact year, but more than 8 years ago, the property owner was asked and required to maintain as a condition to secure spots at a nearby parking garage for employee parking. And so those rental arrangements have been present in the past to help. Certainly it's not precedent setting, but just to let you know the context of how these. That to me. All right, thanks. That's it for staff for now. Yep, and we have the village's planning consultant here to provide his report. Oh, I remember the final thought. We do have certain overnight parking spaces available. What it means is that there is parking after hours, but it is not 24 hours. So they would have the ability to obtain overnight parking spaces, but those spaces are not available during the daytime. They are located in a variety of lots throughout the village. So the East and West Thatcher lots have certain spaces available. I can look online. Guests may have some, so Thatcher night permit spots available there for overnight parking. Not the 24 hour, but the overnight is available. Has five spaces available for. I can go on. I mean, you get the point.
And also has during the day.
Have one 24-hour spot. Have certain overnight spots because during the day, commercial tenants area and village employees park in that lot. It's also used pretty heavily. Village also owns a parking lot at 418 Franklin. There are certain 24-hour spots available there. But those are currently booked up. So. We have a really limited number of 24-hour spots and obviously a very high areas, but there are a number of just overnight parking spots in the area and in the vicinity of this development. And my other final thought was, and you may cover this, if the DRB, if the village opts to recognize the spots wherever they may be, there is an underlying requirement in the zoning ordinance that talks about where off-site spots have to be in development site. And so you would have to consider granting some sort of waiver of that to recognize where those spots might be.
Okay, John Houseel, Village's planning consultant. I'll go through my report. Some things have changed since the initial application was submitted quite some time ago. When it was initially submitted, they weren't proposing any off-site parking. Report going back to July 27th reflects the initial application where there was not any off-site parking spaces. So again, real quickly, I'll go through this. It's pretty straightforward, very different than the library, but it comes down to site development allowance, likely for parking is needed. So this is at 400 Ashland. It's the corner of Ashland and Central. The subject property is zoned C3. It is in the part of the village that we call the Village Center. The C3 district is intended to be a mixed-use, sort of a smaller-scale downtown district where you have multifamily residential and commercial retail restaurant types of uses in close proximity. The subject property is zoned C3, and it is an existing mixed-use building. Typically, when you think of mixed use, you think of vertical orientation of mixed use with commercial or retail on the ground floor and residential or office above. This is a one-story building, so that mix of uses happens to be on one ground, and that's fine. It's what it is right now. It is a district that has a lot of multifamily and a lot of commercial in it already. This is nothing new. So to the north of the subject property, across Ashland, to the east of the subject property, and to the west of the subject property are all other buildings zoned C3, the same as the subject property. And all three of those other locations, north, east, and west, are 5- and 6-story multifamily developments, condominiums, apartments. So the notion of a commercial or some apartment units in this building is consistent with what's around it. To the south of this building, south of Central, is the Union Pacific Railroad. South of the railroad across Hawthorne is single-family residential zoned R2, but you can't even see it. It's on the other side of the railroad embankment. So C2 zoned property, mixed use, that's not changing. Surrounding this property, for all intents and purposes, are other C3 zoned properties, which are multifamily. The relationship to the comprehensive plan, it's consistent with the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan designates this area for mixed use. In addition to mixed use and Village Center zoning and use, which this is now and is as part of this new application, still consistent, there are a few other components of the comprehensive plan that this application reinforces. The comprehensive plan specifically states a desire to see adaptive reuse of existing older historic structures. I don't know if this is qualified as historic, but it is an older existing commercial building. It's kind of quaint. I've always like this building. I think it's a nice little commercial building, and they are adaptively reusing it for proposed residential unit addition, and that adaptive reuse approach is consistent with specific recommendations of the comprehensive plan. Further, as Lisa has indicated, the village has an affordable housing plan. Both in that plan and in the comprehensive plan, there's a recommendation to seek out appropriate opportunities for affordable housing. As indicated by the applicant, the price point for this monthly lease or rent would meet the affordable housing index or threshold for affordable housing units in River Forest, therefore proposing an additional affordable housing unit for the village, which is also consistent with the comprehensive plan. Another specific recommendation of the comprehensive plan is that we should seek opportunities to provide a wider variety of residential product. So it isn't just all single family or expensive condominiums, but we want apartments, condominiums, townhomes, some duplexes, some single family. We want a variety of residential product. So by a studio apartment being proposed, there aren't a lot of studio apartments in the village. This furthers the diversity and range of product type available to the residential market in River Forest. So it's consistent with mixed use. It's consistent with adaptive reuse of structures. It's consistent with providing affordable units, and it's consistent with increasing the variety of housing options in the village. So it hits several different marks of the comprehensive plan. From a zoning analysis perspective, looking at it straight from bulk regulations, bulk is setback, lot coverage, floor area, and height of a building, when I refer to things as bulk standards. It doesn't require any site development allowances because it's not changing anything. There is no proposed addition. There is no increase in height. They are not changing any of the setbacks. They are not changing any of the lot coverage. It is the existing footprint. The only changes to the building that are being made are very minor. The applicant proposed or went over these. It is the addition of a window where there is an installed air conditioning unit, a small location on the south side of the building, and a upgrade of the windows, exact same size opening on the east side facing facade of the building. So there is no zoning relief needed from lot size, lot coverage, lot area, setbacks on either sides, height, FAR, or lot coverage, because they're not proposing any changes. As the applicant indicated, it comes down to parking. And maybe not as complicated as library parking, but complicated nonetheless for parking. Parking in the village is driven by several different things depending on the use. Sometimes it's straight square footage of floor area. Sometimes it's the nature of the use. Sometimes it's the nature of the number of anticipated employees, which is not great, but it's the way the code reads. This happens to include all of the above. So it's a little bit more complicated to calculate. If this were a new development, it would require 12 parking spaces. But it's not a new development, it's existing. As the applicant has indicated, and has Lisa, the previous plan development in 2013 approved it, subject to providing 7 parking spaces, 5 on-site with the commitment to provide 2 off-site. And those off-site ones were with the bank on the same block, just a little bit down the street. Proximity of off-site parking spaces is everything. If a parking space that is off-site is a mile away, it might as well not be an available parking spot. Typically, things are off-site parking is typically has to be 300 feet or less away from the subject property. I don't know what it is for River Forest. I'd have to double check. Again, at the time this was crafted, there wasn't any off-site being proposed. And the proposal that came in today that is in front of you, I was made aware of this afternoon when it got put forth, but I didn't have time to do any digging into the distance for these proposed locations. So if you look at, there's 2 existing one-bedroom apartments now in this building. Those are required by code to provide 2 parking spaces per one-bedroom unit. The studio apartment is not specifically identified. We identify in the code 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom on up. We don't say studio. The village has consistently over time interpreted the parking demand for a studio to be the same as a 1-bedroom in terms of you got to provide 2 parking spaces. And so if you look at 2 parking spaces for the existing units, 2 parking spaces for the proposed unit, then if you look at the office by public floor area, it's 1 space per 400 square feet of office, and there's about 1,600 square feet plus or minus of public floor area. But if I had some issue with the applicant's designation of what was utility versus public versus hallway versus waiting area, it was a little bit, again, that's the challenge of this interpretation. The other aspect of zoning which applies as well for parking is the amount of parking spaces by number of employee. And as a planner, I've never liked this because, McDonald's could come in and say, we're only gonna have 6 employees at any given time, so we only need X number of spaces. You can go in there could be 20 kids working in there. It's a hard thing to gauge parking by. But the code says that you have to have 1 parking space for every 2 employees or 2 proposed employees. So you got to sort of say over time, this office will only employ X number of people. Well, anybody who's worked in an office knows how variable you may have a lot of people packed in an office or very few people packed in an office. So I looked at the applicant's square footage in terms of reasonable application. My office downtown is about 4,000 square feet. I've got about 20 employees and I've got room for more. So if you extrapolate that down to about 3,500 square feet in here, you could have a lot more than 8 employees. So it's challenging, but if you look at all those based on best professional guess and estimates of application, a new development require about 12 parking spaces, but they have 7, so that's the benchmark. So the question is, if they have 7 parking spaces required right now, and that's the chalk line you're snapping, and they're adding a residential unit, now they're converting office space to a residential space, does the parking stay the same at 7? I would say the parking should be raised up by 1. Because every residential unit has to have at least 1 parking space. So we're already saying 1 for the 1-bedrooms, 1 for the studio. So that's 3 parking spaces. They only have 5 on site. Now they're proposing a couple more. That would have only been 2 on site spaces for all that office space. And that's not reasonable. If they provided the 2 off site, which is where they are now, I still think they'd be a little shy of the potential build off for 3,500 square feet of office space. I think they should have at least 3 or 3,500 square feet of office space, more or less. So my recommendation was that they get to 8 parking spaces, the 5 on-site and 3 off-site. So again, right now they have 5 on-site, 2 required off-site. They're converting to a new residential unit, and I'm saying that my recommendation is that they provide 3 off-site, so 8 total. My concern with what I've heard this evening and reviewed this very quickly is that while some of these locations may be appropriate, like the one across the street, because that's within the same block, that's pretty close. We could figure out what the distance is and you could get a you know, a development allowance if there's needed to be one for that distance. CVS might as well be on the moon. No one's going to live here and park their car at CVS, nor would somebody work here and park at CVS. That's, you may technically be meeting the requirement that it would practically be providing nothing. So proximity matters in offsite. So the recommendation is the use is fine, the improvements to the building is fine, the addition of an affordable unit, a studio apartment, a variety of housing, all plus, 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 plus. The only issue is parking. And unless the applicant can provide three off-site in close proximity to this site, I think that's a real obstacle or something that you've got to strongly consider.
In the audience want to address this? Welcome to it.
I'm not sure there's more to add other than the applicant is willing to hear recommendations and possibly you may consider an approval subject to some that the applicant may meet between your vote tonight and in front of the village board. Mr. Chairman.
Victor, and I've been sworn in. I've been a River Forest resident for 23 years. I live down the street on 1400 Park Avenue. I always get your mail, so I always bring it back here because this is 400. I've owned that building, like John said, since 18. I also own 402 Franklin, which is 70 feet away from there. And I've spoken about this. That property has, I believe, 11 parking spaces. I only have 9 units. Two people don't have parking. But that's besides the fact is that doesn't meet the code of extra parking. We've been going through this almost 2 years. The reason I did this is for one of my employees. He's been with me for 14 years. He needs a place to live. He works in Oak Park, one of our offices. And he's a single guy, single dad. His daughter is 23 years old. And I wanted to do this for him. We had at that same spot for the years that I've owned the building. I was an oil company that had 2 employees, 2 cars. He's a single guy that works from 11 to 11. And he has 1 single car and nobody's there during the evening. Everybody leaves from the commercials. So there's always parking spaces. If you go there now, there's 4 parking spaces available because we only have 1 tenant with 1 car. And I just don't know what else to do. We've tried everything. I'm trying to buy it. I'm also a developer. I did 7652 Madison right there in Forest Park, the building, the new building that went up. I've done a lot of development in Oak Park and tremendous amount of development in Chicago. And I just don't, that's all I've got to say. I will rent anything overnight, 24 hours, whatever it's available, closest here. We'll automatically renew every single month if possible. Most likely, tenants don't use it because they're there in the evening and there's 5 parking spaces there on site. And they work during the day. It's an affordable unit. We're going to charge $950. Everything else is included, like with all of our tenants in that building. I've improved it. I did everything possible from landscaping to restore the building to really good standards. That one and 402 Franklin was a disaster. And if there's something that can be done, hopefully we can do it. And if we can't, we can't. Thank you.
Right. else wishes to address, close the public portion of the hearing.
The train station. By the train station,
yeah.
Versus that.
Yeah.
Is there any possibility they can do
one spot available at Lake and Park?
Really doesn't need it. So could we do the Lake and Park one, and then one at Thatcher, which would
use? But
these aren't purchased.
They're not available.
Ones at Thatcher are not available.
No, these are reserved. He's on a wait list, but they're not able to purchase. He would cut a line in front of 12 other people who are waiting.
Well, we don't want.
Yeah. No other 24-hour spaces than at CVS. Now, they may open up over time. But I don't have a timeline for them. But there are overnight spaces available within the area. At Lake and Park, at the East West Thatcher lots. Yes.
Hour at Lake and Park and overnight.
Under the zoning ordinance, they need 3 24-hour spots. What you would be doing is, if you were willing to grant them
waiver,
site development allowance to maintain overnight parking, 2 overnight spots, 1 24-hour spot. So the plan development ordinance that was approved in 2013 created new standard, right? That is 7 spaces. 24-hour spaces. You would be granting a site development allowance of 1 24-hour space at this point. So then, by allowing just overnight, Carmen, please correct me if I'm wrong, you would be saying, we will grant a site development allowance of 24-hour spaces. And you would be granting a site development based on the standard that the C1 zoning district, any off-site parking has. The lot at Lake and Park, as the crow flies from the northwest corner of the lot at 400 Ashland to the southeast corner of the lot at 77 Street, 600, there'd be a site development allowance there. But that's a standard
there
for you to determine.
I agree with what Lisa said.
I'm concerned because the current use of the property is not in compliance. I don't know how long it's been out of proper property to property out of compliance. They knew what was the parking space required, and as far as I know, you didn't do anything to. I'm very skeptical about granting them any kind of relief based on actions of owner or owners of the property to date. My problem. That's your.
All
requirements of this plan to not a secret. Find out the conditions that we place. Hesitancy to but if you were to, if somebody were to make a motion to approve it and a vote, I just of putting using the property and wherever the property is constructed, use it to maintain the monthly rent. So the IHA established threshold for property so that may be as a unit. Size with section 4 of the code. Variation or some based on these rentals, light rain on this owner, work to the village periodically, confirm that the there. To comply with all, each those were some of the
I'll just add that I don't think
this again.
Address something a little different, if I may. For the record, those of you that are new, I was the architect for the applicant that did the original plan development. I didn't know. I knew that a lease was put forward, but it wasn't until we applied for this. Actually, we hadn't yet applied, but we were looking at all the documents. That's when Victor knew that the leases were not active. He actually walked over to the bank, but it was still Community Bank, and community employees said, we don't know anything about it. It's just for the record. I feel compelled to say that because he went through a series of WTF. Hold on a minute.
Late now, John.
And after I did some digging, it turned out that the leases weren't active. So they weren't active because of something he did, but as the chair pointed out, the lawyer didn't do. He didn't delve deep during the due diligence period before he bought the building. But as to the second point, the call is on Victor to wait. It seems like a reasonable request, even though we've been waiting. We've been kicking this can down the road. Lisa opened up a good option to us to look at spaces. I agree that they should be close by because they are single-level residences, which would be great for people with better mobility challenge. Both units are. They both units meet ADA requirements. So I'll leave the call of whether to do an extension or. Chairman, he has.
You want to make a motion? All right, so I'll make a motion to. Enumerated, including the off-street parking and 300.
I'm clear. We're voting. Three spaces still have to be finalized before it gets the final approval. I understand that correctly?
That's that we're saying the village is. We're voting to approve it, but it's got to have three off-site parking.
There are no existing.
Yes. Davis?
Yes.
4-1, move the station subject.
Scheduled meeting is November 4th.
Meet on the 4th and
on
Will we have a quorum on November?
Before, right?
Yeah.